The aftermath of the murder of Baylor University basketball player Patrick Dennehy just keeps getting more and more complicated. Over the weekend, there were controversial revelations about Dennehy's coach, Dave Bliss. Jeff Miller is a sports writer for the Dallas Morning News and has been following this story from the beginning, and he's with us on the phone now. Jeff, good of you to join us.
Glad to do it, Neil.
First, for all the people who have not been following this story closely, can you give us a brief overview?
Sure. Now, Patrick Dennehy had played 2 years of college basketball at the University of New Mexico and then transferred to Baylor a year ago. Now, under NCAA rules, such a transfer has to sit out a season. So he didn't play this past year, but he was on campus at Baylor. Now, in the middle of June, he was suddenly missing, and within a few weeks after that, by the end of the month, the Waco Police Department released a search warrant affidavit that identified one of Dennehy's Baylor teammates, a fellow named Carlton Dotson, as having told a police informant near his home state back in Maryland,
mm-hmm.
that he had shot Dennehy. Now, that is when this suddenly became a big national story, and over the following weeks there were questions about where was Dennehy? Did Dotson really do it? Carlton Dotson was not speaking to anyone. He retained a high-profile lawyer, sports lawyer, out of Florida. But also in the course of this criminal investigation, allegations were risen about came out about the possibility that the Baylor basketball program had broken NCAA rules. Patrick Dennehy's father, Patrick Sr., told us back in late July that he had no explanation for how his son would have paid his tuition and paid his rent because he told us, this was the first it was brought out, that Patrick actually was not on athletic scholarship last year. So as that continued, and Carlton Dotson was eventually arrested, charged with the murder, Patrick Dennehy's body was found late the night of July 25th outside of Waco in an area that Carlton Dotson had identified for authorities. Meanwhile, Coach Dave Bliss was maintaining that he and his program had done nothing wrong. There were more stories in our paper about the possibility of drug use on the team, and more specifically that some players were faking drug tests in order to pass, and that a mother of a former player had called the athletic department and told them that there was a drug problem. Dave Bliss had a news conference on July 28th, said, "We follow the rules. Anybody who says we have a drug problem is nothing further from the truth, and there were ways that Patrick could have paid for his tuition through regular financial aid." This continued for a few weeks until Friday, August the 8th, when a school investigating committee looking into these allegations confronted Dave Bliss with evidence that they had that connected Bliss specifically with the tuition payments for Patrick and for another non-scholarship player.
So the coach appears to have been paying for his tuition?
Yes, or at least part of it. And so on that day, on August 8th, the president of the university, Robert Sloan, announced that Bliss had acknowledged his involvement and was resigning. Likewise, the athletic director, Tom Stanton, was resigning. But then in the wake of that, as you mentioned earlier, the end of last week, we had the bizarre twist of a newly hired assistant coach on Dave Bliss's staff, a fellow named Abar Rouse, coming forward to the investigating committee and to the NCAA and presenting some tapes that he had secretly taped of conversations in Dave Bliss's office in which Bliss was encouraging staff members and a few selected players to try to concoct a story, so to speak, that could explain how Patrick Dennehy would have paid for his tuition. And since there had been stories circulating for weeks about drug use on the team, on the tapes it apparently says that Bliss tried to push this angle. Well, maybe we can get people to believe that Patrick was a drug dealer. You don't have to go too far. Just wait for people to ask you questions, and your answers can kind of lead them in that direction. So you have a situation here, Neil, where violating NCAA rules, while while not what you want to do, is not always seen as a terribly wrong thing. I don't think you're seen as a pariah in the coaching community for going on NCAA probation. But these allegations from last week, as raised by Abar Rouse, that here you have a coach basically trying to save his skin by trying to deflect blame in an area that can't be spoken for by himself, Patrick Dennehy, really put Dave Bliss in an extremely critical position.
We're speaking with Jeff Miller of the Dallas Morning News about the Dave Bliss case in Texas, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As you say, you know, obviously NCAA violations are, you know, why would a coach, you know, even facing this sort of penalty, why would a coach slander, if these allegations are right, slander one of his players, particularly a man who just died?
Well, that is the big question, Neil. Now, you have a coach who, throughout 28 years in the business at a high level at four different schools, has never been found guilty of any kind of major infraction. Does that mean things didn't go on? Who knows? Most people who are associated with college sports, just by the nature of the NCAA rule book, say it's impossible not to break rules. I mean, the coach at the University of Utah was recently, they put his program on probation because he bought hamburgers for his team, you know, fast food violation. But in this case, I don't know if Dave Bliss was just feeling too much heat and panicking from the prospect of him being branded and a cheater, an NCAA rules violator. I don't know, but this was, as you had said in the early part, I mean, this thing's been going on now. It's been 7 weeks since that search warrant affidavit named a teammate as possibly killing another teammate, and it just seems to get more bizarre as we keep going.
It is also, I mean, beyond the Utah case, which seems picayune and minor, but on the other hand, rules are rules. We've had in the past year the case at the at Georgia. You've had St. Bonaventure, and now this case at Baylor, where, again, aside from the tragic death of a man, you apparently had some very serious NCAA violations going on here.
Yes, you're exactly right.
And the exception of Georgia, you know, Baylor and St. Bonnie's, these are not enormous programs. This isn't UCLA.
Right. Baylor, in fact, being a private school, is the exception to the rule in the league in which they play, the Big 12 Conference. Mostly it's larger state schools, University of Texas, University of Oklahoma, University of Nebraska. And Baylor, when this conference was formed in the mid-90s, really was kind of the caboose and latched on, reportedly through the political efforts of then-governor of Texas, Ann Richards, who is a Baylor graduate. And so Baylor is akin to, for instance, other private schools that play in large conferences, Vanderbilt in the Southeastern Conference, Northwestern in the Big Ten. Now the question arises: is this more than Baylor can really compete with? Their football team has not been competitive in the Big 12. Their basketball team has not fared well most years. So the question arises now: is this really the academic and athletic climate that Baylor should be in? Academically. Their president, Robert Sloan, is under a lot of scrutiny and criticism because he is pushing a new emphasis at the school to both improve academically, but also to increase the emphasis on Baylor's religion.
Jeff Miller, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. I apologize. We're running out of time. Jeff Miller, a sports writer for the Dallas Morning News. He was with us from his office in Dallas, Texas. We'll pick up on this story. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.